Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. During this past election campaign, Green Party Vice Presidential candidate Pat LaMarr said that her greatest wish was to highlight issues ignored by the major parties. So she spent 14 nights sleeping in homeless shelters in 14 different cities. She'll talk with some of the people she met along the way, and with you, right after this.
I'm speaking with Sheila Crowley, president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. Sheila, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Oh, thank you very much.
What has been, Sheila, the trend in terms of investment in public housing or all forms of public housing assistance from the federal government over the past few decades?
Well, our analysis shows that the federal government has basically disinvested in housing assistance for low-income people, and that over the past, the peak year in budget authority for low-income housing assistance was at the end of the Ford administration in the 1970s, when it was about $80 billion a year, and in comparative dollars today, we're down to below $30 billion a year. And so you can see that there's been a dramatic decline in the role of the federal government in helping people find and have affordable housing. We are also seeing now a further pullout through the Bush administration. There's last year, because of the way the budget negotiations unfolded, and virtually every low-income housing program was cut. The major program, the voucher program, although it doesn't look like it was a cut because it actually went up, that is a program that's market-based, and so each year the costs of the program respond to what the costs are in the market. So if it's not increased sufficiently, then in fact it is a cut, and so that happened last year as well. We're also now steeling ourselves for what will be, by all accounts and what the Bush administration has leaked, further cuts in all of these programs as a way of demonstrating that they're serious about deficit reduction.
And so the deficit is going to be reduced on the backs, in some extent, of the poorest of the poor, the people struggling to maintain housing?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I guess that's nothing new. But are you saying, if I understand you correctly, that we've had a cumulative shortfall since the Ford years? If we'd stayed at the Ford levels, we'd have spent something like $500 billion more on housing or something like that?
I think if we had continued with the level of investment that we had in the that we were building up to and that we were at in the 1970s, that we certainly wouldn't have seen the stark rise in homelessness in the 1980s. It's not a coincidence that as you saw disinvestment happen at the onset of the Reagan administration, in these programs that you also saw a rise in homelessness. And so, you know, that was a period of time in the 70s when we really did have a sufficient supply of housing for all low-income people. It may not have all been perfect housing, but we did have a sufficient supply. We now have a conservative estimate is that we're about 5 million units short of housing that is affordable to people in the lowest income range.
What has been the practical effect? I mean, if I'm a person looking for an apartment and I'm poor, I know you just published a big report called Out of Reach last December. how easy is it going to be for a minimum wage worker or someone else without a lot of money to go get an apartment in an American city?
It's virtually impossible to be able to afford to rent any place in the country if you are a minimum wage worker. But even if you are a low or moderate wage worker, it's still unaffordable. When we aggregate it out to on a national basis, the figure that we call the housing wage is $15.37 an hour.
We're afraid I've got to cut it off. We're out of time. But Sheila Crowley of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, thank you so much for participating in the marathon.
And then nobody seemed to know me. Well, they keep on passing me by.
This is Pat LaMarsh, and I am filling in for nobody. It's a tough job filling in for nobody because he's done such an incredible job for the last 8 years. And we're all extremely proud and happy to be working with him on this homelessness marathon. My name's Pat LaMarsh. As I said, I was the vice presidential candidate in the year 2004 for the Green Party, another great honor. It's just been a year of honors. I ran with David Cobb, and we worked really, really hard all year, and possibly were best known for being the champions of the Ohio recount. We and Michael Badnarik, the Libertarian Party candidate for president, and Campagna, the vice presidential candidate. You have to be a presidential candidate in this country in order to say that an election stinks. And that all by itself stinks. So we did have the opportunity to contest the Ohio election, the Ohio election results. We contested New Mexico, and we contested them because, quite frankly, people were robbed. And if you don't think people are robbed, then look out in the streets, because there are people living in the streets right now who have been robbed of what is just an inalienable right, which is part of the Constitution. So it's a great honor for me. Again, my name's Pat. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's named after the regular host, Mr. Nobody. 1-877-NOBODY-8 or 1-866-LEFT-OUT. 1-866-LEFT-OUT. And if you're wondering how I got the great honor of being the fill-in host from the 11 to 12 o'clock hour tonight, it's because for 14 nights in 14 consecutive cities, I lived with the homeless folks. I lived in shelters. I lived on the street. I lived all over. We're going to talk to some people on the line. We're going to talk to some people that are here for the Homelessness Marathon. And then I'll tell you a few stories from things that happened to me on living on the street with our nation's most vulnerable, the homeless. Right now, let's see how Thomas is doing. Thomas from Waterbury, Connecticut. Are you there, Thomas?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You've been very patient. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah. And I got your name right, Tanya.
That's why I'm not vice president.
No.
My name's Pat.
Pat, I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I only lost by 58 million votes.
Okay. Pat, my name is Thomas Brown. I'm a former homeless person. I've been homeless off on throughout my life. I'm about 52 years old.
Wow. So what was it, would you say, that heralded your entry into being homeless? What was it? Would you say there was one cause or several causes?
Oh, several causes. Various times. Few times it was cause of my own indulging in socializing with people, you know, that I shouldn't have been, you know, I shouldn't affiliate myself with, and
so
and
sometimes,
times,
sometimes it was some poor choices.
You're right, and a couple of times, one time it was I had landlord problems, and I had my landlord, where I was living in Boston, my landlord pistol whipped me, and my next door neighbor was peeking out crack of his door, and he shot him in the head.
Oh my gosh!
So my mother encouraged me that I should get out of there and not stay in the building, which
yeah.
I did.
Yeah. So Thomas, what would you like to contribute tonight? What would you like to tell us tonight?
Well, I just, you know, I Well, I like to say first that the gentleman, there was a gentleman call on before me, and he was saying his thoughts were that people can come out of this if they do the right thing. But as your host said, it takes money.
Yeah.
You know, it takes money. No matter how foolish you are, if you have money, you're gonna be in an apartment regardless.
Well, you're right. You can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you don't have any boots.
That's right.
And
that's
there's an awful big pension, especially now, and especially with the current presidential administration and the current makeup of the Senate and the House of Representatives, to blame the people who are making minimum wage, who are working two or three jobs, who have no health care, who have no affordable housing, and blame them for their situation, when obviously every senator and representative and the president has affordable housing, has health care, has a decent wage. They're certainly not working for minimum wage. And if they were, they couldn't make ends meet either.
That's right.
Thomas, thank you so much for calling in.
And I'd like to say this one more thing, that my situation, I'm probably soon to be, like I said, soon to be homeless again because property is going to be sold.
Your property is going to be sold, yeah. There are things that happen that are so beyond our control.
That's right.
And that's really what, it's so easy to blame the people who are afflicted, but it's not the correct way to assess the problem, and it's certainly no way to fix it.
That's right.
So, Thomas, you take care of yourself.
Thank you.
We're working for you.
All right.
You know?
Peace be with you.
Peace be with you, too. So that's the whole thing. And I actually, right here, I see we have somebody in the tent over there, but just the U.S. Conference on Mayors came out with a study in December 14th of this past year, December 14th, 2004, right after George Bush's appointment. Hunger and homelessness is still on the rise in all major U.S. cities. Of a survey, they found that requests by families for food and shelter were not only increasing but going unfilled. Up to 27% of requests for food made in this country are not met. That's pretty upsetting. Who's over there in that tent?
Anthony Dixon.
Hi, Anthony. How are you? I'm Pat.
Hello, Pat.
Nice to meet you. What would you like to tell us?
You know, I've been dealing with a struggle. You know, I just have a couple poems to share.
And oh, you're a poet.
Yes.
Oh,
poet,
fantastic.
Artist. I shoot a basketball from half court.
Can you write a poem about the fact that I almost burnt the broadcast tent down? Did you see that?
I could, but it'll take a little time.
Okay, well, later, maybe in another hour. Did you see me? I had my papers in the candles. That was a problem. It's hard to work with people like me, I'll tell you. So go ahead, read us your poems.
All right, this first poem is called Love Me. Love me for who I am. Understand that I'm a man with or without money in my hands. Look beyond materialistic treasures that bring various pleasure. Then look me right in my eyes and tell me what weighs more when you measure. Materials are my life, for I will never rust. And can always be counted on with an undying trust. Neither am I able to be repossessed and will gain many materials on my lifelong quest. So carefully judge when it comes to the issue of love, and maybe you'll see that you really should love me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
This is one I wrote called Wings of Freedom. I have wings, not like a bird, but wings that allow me to fly through spoken words. Traveling at the speed of a javelin, thrown like the spear of an African Mandinko warrior. Superior as the Zulu, leaving you who thinks I'm inferior. Similar to the interior walls of a shelter shower store. Filthy rich with disgust, must and omo beyond your control. Almost too hard to believe the disease it breathes as it feeds upon a depressed human flesh that hasn't had any rest. And countless days and nights from wandering astray in the streets. So please, close your eyes to open your mind and find yourself free, you lost black sheep. We should be trying to reach each other, to teach each other. My sisters and brothers, are we not the keepers of each other? Then stop trying to beat and defeat each other for those that have let ignorance consume their souls. And in the process of consumption, causing a malfunction, leading to their own self-destruction and nothing more than a hollow hole. What waste goes and is disposed of. It's yourself who you should be ashamed of. Then at 30 and still wants to be a thug. What you need to do is pick up some responsibility and let go of that 4-0, along with your grudge and also your ego. Because as far as I can see, what you need is a hug, or better get some love and all of the above, before you end up below faster than you can ever imagine it happening for not letting them negative thoughts go.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much.
That.
Thank you for reading your poems.
My pleasure.
Now, where do you write them? Are you currently homeless?
Yes, I currently stay here at the Columbus House.
So you're here at the Columbus House.
Yeah.
And have you been in and out of shelter, or?
Yes. I've been in and out of here. I made my way up out of here one time. You know, I got laid off.
Yeah.
And ended up back here. Got behind on my bills. Had trouble finding another job in time. And, you know, this could happen to anyone.
And you managed to keep your spirit high enough to write poems.
Yes, yes. This is definitely the way I vent, you know, my frustration. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Well, I happen to know, and I heard a few interviews when I was back in the green room waiting before I came out here, that there are homeless magazines and newspapers listening tonight. So hopefully, why don't you make sure you leave your name with Karen, who's the producer up back. Leave your name with Karen and make sure that she knows how to get a hold of you, because that poetry should be printed.
Yeah, I have
stuff.
Some more that I'm going to be coming back, you know.
Okay.
So I'll come back and share some more with you.
Very good to have met you. Take care. See, that's the thing is, you know, one of the things, there were so many myths of homelessness that were displaced for me in the 14 years that, 14 years, it felt like 14 years, 14 days that I was living on the street. But one of them is that the people who live on the street basically have a mental illness or a drug addiction. And sure, a few people do. But the vast majority of people living on the street are people who cannot make enough money to make ends meet. And this is the United States of America. We hear about its wealth all the time. But what we're not told is the wealth is really concentrated. Or if we are told, we're not listening because we're too busy making craft dinner and going to the soccer game and trying to get our kids here, there, and everywhere while we're working two jobs. But the important thing to remember is that the wealth is concentrated in the hands of the few. And this wealthy, wealthy nation still pays $6 or $5.75 or $5.50 to the person making your coffee colada. And that's just plain wrong. If a person cannot make a living wage in this country, the living wage needs to be implemented and people need a raise. 40% of people who work at Walmart qualify for food stamps. That's the average taxpayer subsidizing Walmart to underpay its people. Somebody else in the tent over there. Come on up. Hi.
Hello.
What's your name?
My name is Terrence Jeffers.
Terrence, you are way too tall for that microphone, aren't you?
I know. I probably should raise it. I'll raise it a little
just
bit.
Just so you don't need a new back.
I know. But I just wanted to get on the mic and thank the people down at the Overflow. I recently became homeless, and I've been staying down there for about a week now.
Now, what's the Overflow? Explain how that works.
I'm sorry. It's part of the Columbus Houses. Down the street, actually. I'm not sure where. I'm actually not from New Haven. That's part of the reason why I'm homeless now. Mm-hmm. As I've just gotten into town, there's really nobody to really help out. But I'm on my way to not being homeless anymore. I've been working with a few guys. And what I really wanted to do is, again, thank these guys for the tremendous help and support that they've given me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm not in a trap. I feel like I am going to make it out of this very soon.
Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 23.
23, and have you been on the street much?
No. This is actually the first time anything like this has ever happened to me.
You got a great set of pipes. You ought to be a disc jockey. Oh, and then you'd really be poor.
Well, I've been told that before, but no, actually, I'm not worried about making money. I'd rather be happy than to make a lot of money. My thing is, I've seen a lot of different things being down in the shelter, and again, I thought everybody who was in the shelter had a mental disorder or a drug problem or right. something like that, and it's really not like that. It's just, you know, people are set back. And
are there children in the... See, I'm new to the area, too. I live in Maine. Are there children in this particular shelter?
Well, down where I stayed, no. There's only men. Mm-hmm. But you know, you hear the stories, you hear about people's hardships, you know,
yeah.
and it's kind of sad because again, before this, I'd see people on the streets and it was none of my concern about what their problems are. And again, a lot of these people are really good people and really are trying to make it out. Mm-hmm. And our government just isn't set up. To help, but we don't actively take it. I don't know.
Well, it's not set up to help us. It's
true.
Set up to help the folks who don't need the help.
Exactly. And what's sad is I heard someone mention about the election. It's like the highest population out of the classes are middle class people, and they really didn't vote a president that would help them.
No.
You know, the president is really going to only help out the upper middle class and the upper class. So it's kind of like, are we going to forget about the homeless? Are we going to forget about people who are in need?
I think that the current administration would like that. And I know Dennis is holding on the line, too. We're going to go to Dennis in a minute. But I think you make a really good point, which is our Constitution is built so that you run this country.
Exactly.
And I run this country. And all the folks inside that shelter, they run this country. And all the president does is speak for us.
Exactly.
And when the president stops speaking for us, bye-bye.
What's sad is they put a sort of a shield, a blind over our eyes, and we don't realize that we do control a lot of the things that go on. And if we did elect somebody who was more concerned with our issues, and I mean, I look at the election and it was like people voted on moral values.
I think if you forget about
the homeless and the poor, it's not like.
It's not moral.
Yeah, it's not right at all.
Yeah. 10 million people in the streets isn't moral. 97% of the city's reporting an increase in homeless families. That's not moral.
Exactly. I don't have the numbers and everything to go concrete.
Well, I got them, so you make the statements. I'll back you up.
Well, I see you're doing a great job right now. And
you make those statements. I'll back you up.
And what's funny, again, is we have all the power and it's like we're not even using it at all.
Well, when you get your feet underneath you, you can't just be a voter. You got to run for office too. So I'll be watching for you.
I stay out of it because I'm kind of discouraged actually.
Well, pick somebody if you don't want to run yourself. Pick someone you can believe in and work for them because we need new representatives.
Yeah, a lot of these guys they really don't make the issues clear, and I know that was a big thing with the Democratic Party is that they weren't clear. But I blame the voters as well. I mean, take an active role in finding out what these guys are standing on and what they're going for. Because, I think we're in trouble with this administration and where they're taking us, especially with all this war stuff. Well, I'm not really concerned with other countries. I'm concerned about ours.
Right.
And it's a sad situation to see a great country like this just head in a bad direction.
Well, it's really important that people listening to you right now hear how smart you are and how articulate you are. You're welcome, but it's really important because that dispels this myth of homelessness. That gets rid of that stigma that says, oh, homeless folks, they don't know what they're doing. You're proof that a homeless man is a smart man, an articulate man, a man who can run his government, and that we've got to get together and stand behind each other.
And you know what is funny is, again, I was one of those people who sort of blame homeless people. It's your own fault, but now I see it's sort of the middle class fault because we have the most power. And again, I still consider myself a middle class person because I don't see myself staying in this situation very long.
Darn right.
But until people take an active role, until we start holding the voters accountable and start holding people accountable for what they're doing, I mean, we're looking to head in the wrong direction.
Well, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
Yes. Again, right. I'd like to mention a few names to thank.
Okay.
Pete down there, Monty. Monty spoke earlier. Calvin, John. The list kind of goes on. Ron. It's everybody down there at that overflow. And again, thank you guys.
All righty. You take care of yourself.
Oh, I will.
Okay, now if you're trying to pick us up or if you'd like to see the the crazy woman who set fire, if you missed the fire, who knows what I'll come up with next. So log on www.homelessnessmarathon.org. There's a webcam. You don't know what excitement's next. Did we, I don't know for you guys out there, did we get me setting the place on fire on tape? Oh, yeah, we did. Okay, great. We're going to go to Dennis right now. Dennis on the phone. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thanks for your patience. I'm Pat. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Well, thanks so much for doing the program, Pat.
My pleasure.
This whole thing of homelessness is, in many people's minds, I think, they don't quite understand. I mean, at one point in time, I was making over $100,000 a year and, you know, had a home, a family, and one thing led to another, and it can happen to anybody. It's not just, people that are born into bad circumstances. You can go up, you can go down.
Yeah.
And, if it weren't for a bunch of kind people around me, I'd be there again. Mm-hmm. And I'm concerned with what's going on with this government, that a lot of people could be there again. I think the primary problem is taking money from these programs that we are paying for and putting it into going attacking other countries.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we've got the president has just said now that he wants to increase the death benefit for those poor souls we are sending over to Iraq to do this awful war thing. And he's increasing the death benefit, but his new budget calls for a cut for veterans. So if you live and you're a veteran, you're going to wish you were dead, because it's the only way your family's not going to end up homeless. And that's what this president's doing, and that's what this current administration has in mind, is this awful war and this awful war on the poor in our own country.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dennis, I appreciate your patience. You got to get out there and work really hard and talk to your friends, and for crying out loud, make sure they know we need to save Social Security.
Well, I certainly didn't vote for this guy that's in here now. I voted for Dennis Kucinich.
Well, that's wonderful. And next time you see LaMarche on the ticket, feel free to check it off.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for doing the
take
program.
Care, Dennis. Yeah, take care.
All right.
I hope these people don't think I'm too awfully serious. Okay, Misha is on the phone with me, but I'm not going to go right to Misha. First, I'm going to go to Dave from Salem, Oregon. Misha and I got to know each other when I was on the when I was living in different homeless shelters, and she's from Knoxville, Tennessee. But first, I'm going to Dave from Salem. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
How you doing?
Hi, Pat. I'm good. I'm doing real good right now. I've got a good job. I'm a nurse. I sort of am one of the very few people, I think, who actually was able to pick themselves up by the bootstraps from homelessness.
You're one of those people who has one of those jobs that's always listed in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was not an easy thing, but anyway, I don't want to. I'm not here to give myself a pat on the back for.
But wouldn't it be great if we had free education for people who wanted to become nurses?
Hey, I'm all for that.
Yeah. I mean, we've got a shortage of nurses.
you know, the subsidies are going away from education.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot harder for someone right out of high school to get a college education now. I'm 53 now, so I mean there was a lot of opportunity, and I wasted a lot of opportunities, and it's just a lot harder nowadays. Let's just leave it at that.
Well, it is harder. I went to Boston College in 1978, and my tuition was $3,000. The tuition in Boston College right now is $38,000. Well,
yeah.
You know, if I had gone to Boston College 600 years ago, that might make sense, but it was only 20. So it's obvious that the subsidies and the support for kids to go to college, they're just not there anymore. And we know education is your best way out of poverty.
We know it. Well, you will find a lot of people say that's the key to a decent job and a fair chance at life in this country is to have a good education. But I wanted to talk about something that I'm looking into. I at one time wanted to become a housing policy analyst and program development specialist, and for a lot of reasons that didn't work out. I used to set up homeless programs in a very small county in California, and I never dreamed I'd end up homeless myself, but I did. And three times I did.
So do you feel like...
It had nothing to do with drugs or anything like that. It was just a lot of things I couldn't have foreseen and just didn't anticipate.
Yeah.
But what I'm working on right now, I'm making better money than I ever have in my life. And I still feel like we can't get a house.
Right.
My wife and I, we made over $100,000.
Yeah, wow.
This last year. And I only have a couple more years to work. My health isn't real great right now. So I can foresee being out of the job market in a little while. So what I'm working on right now is, you know, most of the people, poor people in the world, live in earthen structures. This is something that's hardly looked at in the United States as an alternative. There are organizations who are doing some research and development around these sorts of houses. There's a couple here in Oregon. And what I'm looking at with my wife right now to develop is a cob house. It's basically made out of mud and straw and sand.
Yep.
And people can build it without having a lot of skills. without going into great debt.
You're in Salem, aren't you?
I am.
Okay, yeah, so you've got to get over to Portland, Oregon, and you've got to go to the Dignity Village over there. Have you heard of that place?
I have heard of it, yeah.
It's a village built of homeless shelters. It's the most paradoxical place you'll ever see because it's right next to a minimum security prison. So here's all this trepidation, here's all this vulnerability, here's this just totally homeless situation right next to three square meals and a roof over your head, but you've got no freedom. It's just the wackiest thing to look at. But at Dignity Village there, where the sturdy beggars watch out for the deserving poor, is what they told me. At Dignity Village, they're building these cob houses. They're doing exactly what you're talking about. You got to get over there. You got to talk to those great folks over there. I'm sure they'll share their
rumors about this, but I didn't know it actually was going on.
Right in Portland, Oregon. Head on over there. It's right next to the compost pile in the town.
Well, I know there are a lot of people working on this, but what I'm doing in my own small way, we do want to build one of these houses, myself, my wife and I, and my daughter wants to help. So I'm doing research, six counties around Salem.
Mm-hmm. How far are you from Portland?
To find the one jurisdiction that would be most cob friendly. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we have to deal with building officials. Right. A lot of these houses are built without codes people knowing about it or building officials. It's sort of below the radar screen.
Dave, I'm going to
have a lot of resistance, and I'm going to try to go about it the official way.
Yeah, it's good to go legit way. I'm going to have to let you go, though, because we've got a pile of people lining up in the tent, and I got people lining up on the phones.
Okay.
But really, get over there and talk to those great folks at Dignity Village.
Well,
it's a
wonderful
place.
Well, there are alternatives. There's strange things out there, but there are alternatives for,
absolutely,
for poor people. And
let's get Jimmy Carter
back. I'm really glad
that
you're doing this show. And
thank you.
It's a subject very near and dear to my heart. So.
Well, thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work.
Okay. Take care. Hey, Misha, are you there?
I am.
Is that you?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't talked to you since, Knoxville.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, Misha was one of the wonderful people when I was at the YWCA in Knoxville, which is a transitional housing kind of unit, wouldn't you call it, where folks are far more secure than the typical homeless, but they're getting their feet back underneath them?
Correct.
And I met you there, and you're a police officer.
That's correct.
So you must bring a wealth of knowledge to being a police officer as a formerly homeless person.
Well, I tell you, I'm very fortunate. And first of all, I want to say, you know, I want to say definitely if my mother's listening, you know, hello to my mom and happy Valentine's Day. Also, to all of the staff here at the YWCA, I mean, this has been just an incredible journey for me, being a part of the YWCA. I had no clue to what I was getting in, but the road so far has been incredible, and I'm looking forward to even greater things happening here in Knoxville.
Well, you certainly inspired the women when I was there. You know, you give women who feel as though they haven't, and that's the shame about the YWCA is it's just women. You know, if some area men had been able to have a similar facility, but you really give those women an opportunity to see that all they have to do is believe in themselves.
Right. I moved to the YWCA just a couple of years ago. I had about $60 in my pocket. I had probably a different circumstance. Many of the women here come from sometimes past drug-related histories, some from abuse situations. Also, some have been abandoned by other family members and things of that nature. But, you know, I had taken care of a elderly grandmother who had Alzheimer's and put my life on hold a couple of times just to make sure that she was adequately taken care of along with my mother. And, you know, I basically put my life on hold, and thus put me in a situation where, you know, I had to find something that was going to help me get a new start. And the YWCA offered that to me at the time. I moved in, had $60 in my pocket. I had to go out and get a job, and found a job. Didn't necessarily like it at the time, but it was a job. And I knew that I had a college experience, and I knew that, you know, I had a direction, I had a plan for my life, and it was just a matter of things sort of working themselves out. And, you know, about a year after living here, I became a police officer, and things just have gone great from there. I now teach a self-defense class, of which I've been teaching tonight. That's why I'm a little bit hoarse, but just bear with me. But again, I mean, I had some great people rallying around me, and this great support here at the YWCA. YWCA here offers a temporary place for women to stay, especially, you know, when they're facing challenging crossroads and hard times. We house about 58 women, $42 a week. We have a common kitchen, laundry facility. Pat, you were here, and I must say we enjoyed you staying here, and many of the women were excited to know after the fact. I don't think it really hit them at the beginning, but after the fact, knowing that the vice president, person like yourself was in the building. So it was exciting for many of the women.
Would have been more shocking if it had been Dick Cheney, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, most definitely.
You know, Misha, you could do the show. We should have just scheduled you to be the host. You're doing such a great job. I just wanted to insert for a minute, the biggest problem with the YWCA is the waiting list.
Right.
The biggest problem is these great programs like yours and then COTS in Detroit, which is an incredibly wonderful program. The waiting list is so long. And if people could just duplicate what you folks are doing at the Y, duplicate what's happening up at COTS in Detroit, duplicate it all across the country and fully fund it, we would have people out of homelessness.
That's very true. And, you know, it's a challenge. I know that talking with Sally Leiter, who's the CEO, just on yesterday evening, you know, working on grants to try to come up with ways to make the programs here, useful and something that the women can get a lot out of. And so, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but there's people here, Sherry Kellerman, who's the residential director, many others that are here. I can't name everyone by name, but they all work very hard. Joanne Rotherby also, everyone does a great job here and working together and trying to come up with solutions.
Yeah,
and you have to have a place where everybody's heart is for people. And I think that's the main concern.
Yeah.
If people are working together common good for other people to succeed and to have a better life, then that's what it's about.
Right. Let me just remind people, Misha's calling us from the Knoxville, Tennessee YWCA, where she herself went to live because she had such a marginal existence. They helped her get her feet underneath her. She's now a police officer. If you want to check out the webcam, www.homelessnessmarathon.org. If you want to call in, 1-877-NOBODY-8 or 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Now, we don't want to leave out Rapid T, who's on the line. We're going to bring you right. Now, Misha, don't go away, because you can talk to people with me.
Okay.
And we have people backing up in the tent, too. So we want to talk to everybody, and we want to try and get all these folks on. So, Rapid T, are you still there?
Hey, how you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Oh, it's a snowy, wet, rainy, all of the above here in Buffalo.
Oh, lake effect snow.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I wanted to call in and say, you know, you're talking about, like, homeless people. I mean, I was in Ohio State back in 94, and I just got turned on to by my couple of friends into hopping freight trains. And I've hopped freight trains all over this country. I mean, up through Portland, Maine, to Portland, Oregon. Some of the most beautiful scenery I've seen is out in Whitefish, Montana, going through the plains and going through the tunnels. And I've stayed at over 60 shelters in this country. And it's just, it's interesting, the cross-section of people that you meet. But it always seems that there's always going to be a core group of homeless people. You're never going to eliminate homelessness entirely.
Well, and I don't think anyone's talking about the adventuresome folks like you who are seizing life, you know, and having a wonderful time. But I've been in shelters with families and little children, and I've been in shelters in states where they take your little kids away from you just because you don't have a roof.
And that is really sad. I mean, I've also got the problem I'm seeing now is where you have common law couples who can't stay together with each other in shelters.
Mm-hmm.
I've also run into situations where you have a lot of homeless people have companion animals, that they can't take with them in shelters, so they have to sleep outside.
Well, Rapid T, I don't know the ones you were in, and certainly the one that I was in where Misha was a wonderful place, but if you gave me an opportunity again after staying in 14 cities across this country to either live in the woods or live in a shelter, I'd take the woods any day.
Well,
because most of the shelters are not, you know, you can't have, like you said, you can't have your companions, you can't have your spouse or your partner with you. A lot of those shelters, you can't have your partner even if you are legally married.
Right.
You know, there's an awful, I was in Arkansas, not only do they separate married couples, but they take your children away. There's no worse sound, and it used to be my favorite sound, than a nursing child in Arkansas, because when that kid's old enough, that child, if that parent hasn't got their act together and hasn't got a place to live, and it's tough to get your act together on $5.75 an hour, if that parent can't do it, they're going to take the baby and put him in foster care.
Yeah.
That's, you know, there are just horrible things going on to folks who just don't make enough money, period. That's their whole crime. And that's why this whole homelessness marathon's going on. That's why nobody's here. That's why Misha's on with us. That's because we're trying to raise awareness to folks that, for crying out loud, the criminals in this world are not the people who are poor.
Well,
and that's what it's turned out to be.
The thing about it is a lot of the shelters expect you to work for them mm-hmm. for a period of time for up to 6 to 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the shelters, most of the shelters that I've come across are religious shelters.
Yep.
Are missions, and their mission is you know, one of the frustrating, a lot of them are run by evangelical Christians.
Uh-huh.
Their interest is, their first mission of a lot of these missions is to change people's faith
mm-hmm.
into getting people to accept Jesus as their personal Savior. But the thing about it is I asked a couple of the missions that I've been in, I said, can I still accept Jesus Christ as my personal Savior and be a liberal socialist Democrat? And they
the Green Party wants you too, baby.
Well, the thing about
What did they say?
They said, "Well, once you become a born again Christian, you'll know better."
Well, you know what? I want to tell you a really quick story. I was at this one shelter, and this woman, when I walked in the room, she said, "God sent you to me," and I said, "He did." She did. And the woman said, "Yes, I knew you were coming, and you've been sent to me, and I need to tell you that I know that George Bush has turned his back on us. I know that George Bush has turned his heart away from the poor and away from God's children. I know it." And I said, "Oh, well, that's great." She said, "But God's going to turn his heart back. God's going to do it, and then we will not be poor like we are now. I'll get my children back. These things won't happen to us." And I said, "Do you believe that God works through people?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, then God does not want you voting for him." Because the way his heart's going to get turned is when he loses this election. And, oh, my gosh, we forgot about
well,
them being able
you know,
to steal election ballots.
Bill Clinton wasn't too bad. He started this whole welfare reform thing.
Oh, I know.
Anytime you hear the word reform, it's another word for cut.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I liked a lot of things that they've done at the YWCA. One of the most frustrating things for me and for the working traveling hobo is there used to be YMCAs all over the place. Mm-hmm. Dan Rather used to stay at YMCAs, but they've closed.
No, now we know what happened to him.
But what I'm saying is you used to be able to go into any sizable town from Jamestown, New York, to Buffalo, New York, mm-hmm. to Lackawanna, to Syracuse. They used to have YMCAs all over the place.
Yeah, too
where
much.
Where men could stay, they could work day, you know, a day job at well, now they were called labor halls. Now they've sort of exploiting us through this agency called Labor Ready.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? It's an epidemic now. It used to be you only had a few guys to house. It's an epidemic now. There's just too many people, and most people aren't single trying to look for a place now. But, Rabbit T, I'm going to thank you, and then I'm moving out to the tent. Because
right.
We've got people in line at the tent. But thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, maybe I'll see you up in Maine when I go to visit Mom up there.
I am in the phone book. Pat LaMarche once ran for vice president.
All right.
All right. Take care. Yeah. Okay, who's next?
It's Terrence again.
Oh, hi, Terrence.
I just wanted to, I heard earlier after I talked that you guys talked about the death penalty and about Bush funding money for the death penalty.
I don't think we talked about the death penalty, but what would you like to say?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, I thought about it, and it's like they're putting money into programs like killing people instead of helping people, you know, helping the poor and funding.
Well, war is certainly killing people.
Yes, and they're funding different things like that, mm-hmm. but they're not funding homeless shelters. They're not helping out the YMCAs and the WCAs or different programs like that, but they're out there.
You're right.
You know,
that's what
again,
we need.
Standing the political, excuse me, it's been a while. I was
long day. I
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Well, it's they're out there. These parties are out there funding the wrong programs and different things like that. And I just wanted to say, again, I feel like it's the voters' fault. I feel like a lot of us out here who are trying to help the homeless, we need to really make sure that the parties are being their messages are clear and that people understand where they're standing and where they're trying to take the country.
I want you to run for office. You got a couple of years. I won't make you do it this year, but I'm saying by 2010. But I'm going to let somebody else speak because you've already spoken, okay?
Okay.
Take care of yourself, buddy. All right. Who's next?
Hi, I'm Margaret.
Hi, Margaret. I could only tell you were still there by your bright red pants. welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you. I just want to say I work for Columbus House as a case manager, and I've been working for Columbus House almost 5 years now. And as an outreach worker, you know, I've seen a lot of people. I didn't realize how in-depth homelessness was until I started working for homelessness. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people that actually live under bridges and in the woods and stuff, and I was amazed mm-hmm. by that, because you hear about homelessness, but you never know until you actually see it, you know? I'm grateful for Columbus House for giving me the opportunity to work for with them. And I love my job. And one thing that really puzzles me is because there's no way I don't see how it should be so much homelessness in the United States, because when the tsunami happened, how everybody bridged together
right.
to send so much over there.
You know, I was in Connecticut. I'm in Connecticut now, aren't I?
Yeah.
I was in Connecticut, and I was talking to a woman in Connecticut back during the campaign, like in September. And she said, you know, it's really important to people who have a lot of things to believe that the homeless are getting what they deserve. Because if they don't believe that, then they can't believe that they've got what they deserve. And I thought about it. You know, if you got a big, beautiful house, and you got a big, beautiful car, and you've got all the food you could ever want, you have to believe you deserve that. And part of, like, not thinking past your own selfish needs is believing that the people who have nothing deserve that, too.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either,
I don't believe that, because there's a lot of people that really, truly, because I really got an insight on mental illness mm-hmm. since I've been working for Columbus House. And sometimes people really cannot help themselves.
Oh, I don't think anybody can help themselves. But what do you think is the cause of why people who have so much will give to the tsunami victims, will give to the, but won't step up to the plate, call up their senator and say, hey, guess what? This homeless issue is a crisis. I want it fixed.
Exactly.
What is stopping them?
I don't know. And that's what puzzles me, because when they bridge together to help those people in tsunami, I mean, the mm-hmm. president, I mean, the ex-presidents and all of them came together.
Well, the president wasn't too willing. You want to give him $19 million, which is what we spend in like 35 minutes in Iraq blowing people up.
So what is the problem with them giving the people in the United States $19 million to help out with homelessness?
Well, that's that whole thing.
And to me, I think that it's just so narrow-minded.
It also keeps people working in lousy jobs.
Yes.
If I think, oh, my God, if I lose my lousy job, I'm going to be homeless, I'll keep my lousy job just so I'm not homeless.
Exactly.
And that's another part of it,
right.
I think.
And, you know, and it's sad because, you know, I won't say that homelessness will always be, but it will. And, you know.
Well, it will be till we get the collective will to stop it. What's your first name again?
Margaret.
Margaret, thank you.
And until
so much.
We can get somebody in there that has some kind of empathy and sympathy in their hearts for the people, I don't think that, you know, this will ever be an end to this.
The people have to decide that they have the right to have someone with sympathy and empathy as their leader. They got to see Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. as leaders.
Exactly.
And not these big W
rich
is for whoop-ass
CEOs
crap that we've got
that,
running the country. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care. 1-877-NOBODY-8, 1-877-NOBODY-8, or 1-866- left out, 1-866 left out. Those are numbers if you want to weigh in on this. I was in Arkansas, which I was in 14 different locations. I lived with the migrant farmers in Sonoma Valley. Do not buy Gallo wine. Don't do it. Don't buy Gallo, but buy two bottles of Union wine and drink them both, because that way, you're still there, Misha, good. That way you're helping out folks who are working hard. But when I was traveling around, I met this one man, and he and I were looking at Hurricane Jean together at about 5 a.m. on a little tiny TV in a homeless shelter. And he had never been homeless before the night before. And he looked at me and he said, look how fast the government acts when it's a hurricane. Look at how fast they act when it's a disaster. And then he looked at me and he had the sweetest face. I'm just telling you, it was just such a sweet face. And he said, how come they don't think we're a disaster?
Uh-huh.
How come they don't think homelessness is a disaster? And it's just that, Misha, it's not a priority, is it?
You're absolutely right. I think, you know, even in my situation, I think that perhaps at some point in my life, I never really thought about it. You know, I didn't think that I would be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never anticipated it, never thought about it.
Do you meet people who were shocked to find out you were homeless?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, because you're a police officer. You're all put together. You're tall, attractive,
well,
nice
woman.
Well,
I don't
woman,
know about
yeah.
all that. But
they look at you and they say she's had her stuff together her whole life.
Well, you know, maybe. I don't know. But I think that, like I said, I think that sometimes people don't really see it. Or maybe they don't want to see it, you know. Maybe in my case, I didn't want to see that I could ever be homeless. I remember driving by and seeing people holding up signs and thinking, why don't they just work?
Mm.
But then, you know, now that I'm here at the YWCA, I'm here in Knoxville as a police officer, you know, I deal with homeless people, on a daily basis at times. And now I understand, you know, and now I have compassion. Now I understand what it's like. You know, I understand to come into a little room and have just a little bit to eat and mm-hmm. try to make it last. I understand if I have to find some clothing on a table that might fit my 5'11 frame, all legs, you know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying?
Yep.
So I think that sometimes people don't really want to see what's out there.
Yeah, because it seems overwhelming maybe, but I mean, it's like Margaret just said about the tsunami, you know, nobody kicked in the whole, what was it, one famous actress kicked in $1 million, but for the
mm-hmm.
most part, that was a $15 a piece contribution. You know,
right.
it wasn't a whole pile of people with huge amounts of money. It was a little bit all added together.
Right.
And that's really what we have to do for this. And the most important thing we can do is to call our legislators.
Right.
And you can get on the internet, look up your legislators, and write them a very quick email that says, this is my priority, and if it's not your priority, I'm voting for whoever runs against you.
Right. And also letting them know that there are programs out here. I mean, they know it, but I think we need to somehow shake them a little, rattle them a little, and let them know that there are programs out here that are trying to help people become better productive citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we register people to vote mm-hmm. here at the YWCA. That's a big deal to us.
There were, when I was there with you, there were several people that hadn't registered before.
Correct.
Yeah, and one woman, remember she said she thought her children would help her if she wanted to run for office. And here's a woman who a few months earlier had been homeless thinking about running for office.
Right.
And if the YWCA hasn't done anything as wonderful as that, although we know that they have, to make a person feel that powerful after
right.
being so powerless.
Well, a part of the sort of motto of the YWCA is eliminating racism and empowering women. And, you know, that is just a big phrase in and of itself.
And a big order, yeah.
You know, eliminating racism of not just in color, but racism against homeless people.
Right.
You know, just, you know, the way people treat people. You know, it's not just about being homeless or being black or white or Hispanic or whatever. It's about being a person. It's about sharing. It's about living in this big, great nation of ours and understanding and having compassion for people.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Misha, Ed from Boulder is on the phone, and he's been homeless. Welcome, Ed. Welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you doing? Mine was mostly choice homelessness in another country in another decade, some 25 years ago. I considered myself fortunate enough to have family and friends that compared to what you see today with the forced homelessness, complete homelessness. Mm-hmm. And I worked for some years for a foundation that gives money to shelters, and we've been trying to address rural homelessness. We've for years funded programs in cities or super cities, but we found shelters in places like Scottsbluff, Nebraska, or, mm-hmm. very resource-stripped small towns of America.
Well, it really doesn't take much to go from having $200 in the bank to having absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Or 2,000,
right.
Or 20,000.
I was actually in a shelter in Denver.
Which one?
That was, it was a co, I don't remember the name. I have mm-hmm. my book in front of me, but it was a co-op of like 12 churches. And they all took 4 weeks at a time and helped families that were newly homeless get their feet back underneath them. And those are the easiest people to put back on their feet. The people who have only fallen down once or only fallen down for a little while. The people
sure.
that still have their car. But once you've been chronically homeless, once you're chronically making minimum wage, once you've been chronically ill. It's interesting. There were 2 million bankruptcies in the United States last year tied to medical expenses. Medical expenses caused bankruptcies. 75% of those people had health insurance.
They had it, but
they
was canceled. When they got sick and
they couldn't afford to keep the premiums going, they lost their job, they lost their insurance, and then they lost everything. And those people end up homeless. So it's the whole system was rotten.
I call it catch-22 homelessness, meaning that, it's...
danged if you do and danged if you don't.
Incidentally, we're undergoing this aside thing, but it has to do with the current administration. Our foundation lost $200,000 in Enron bonds.
Wow. Can you name quickly your foundation, or do you not want to?
Hitchcock Foundation. There's currently, some litigation going on regarding the Enron, but I contended to the court that if the bank would simply pay this $200,000 to homeless shelters rather than fight their purchase of
you're a nice man to think that's possible.
Well, it's proper.
It's proper. It
and
is.
And the bank was the bank that started that corporation. But really, when you get back to the homelessness, there's far little paid to these shelters.
Yeah, Ed, I'm running out of time, but thank you so much for calling in. The homelessness marathon is going to be going on for many hours yet to come. Feel free to weigh back in again.
Okay,
Misha,
all the best and bless all those out there.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Misha. It's been wonderful chatting with you again.
Yes.
I'll chat with you some more online. Hopefully we'll have an opportunity to talk again in the next few months or so.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm working on a book about my experiences. When I get it done, hopefully you'll write a few words for me I can put in it.
I'd love to do that.
Take care of yourself, Misha.
Hey, you too.
Best of luck.
You too. Bye-bye.
And then, Elaine, if you can sum up your thoughts in 30 seconds, we're going to try and put you on the program. Are you there, Elaine?
Sure, I'm here. I just wanted to respond to what Margaret said about the outpouring of support for the tsunami victims. And what I see is that what we need is more of a commitment on the part of everybody here. We're living in a consumerist society. We need to realize that there's people at the very top with all of this wealth, and if we could somehow engage them to open up their hearts to do something to provide housing, to provide support, to provide a better paying wage, that some of this could be alleviated.
Well, Elaine, that's beautifully put. And I think that we can do that with the law. We can just pass a law that the minimum wage is $12 an hour. We can just pass a law that every person is entitled to and will receive health care, just like they receive an education in the public school system. And every time I hear someone put down the Postal Service, I'm wondering what they expect for 37 cents. I always get my mail. I'd love to have the federal government bringing me health care the way they bring me my mail.
I treat my postal person like gold.
Yeah, I know. It's a wonderful thing. So, Elaine, you're right here in Connecticut also, huh?
Yep, I'm right here in Fairfield County, and I actually work for a homeless agency.
Well, keep up the good work, and thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks for having the program.
I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm on my way out of here. I think it's probably best, considering I've set the place on fire, that I get out before I do anything really, really bad. I feel a little like Cinderella. Cinderella of the... of the homelessness marathon. I'm about to turn into a pumpkin, and I'd like to thank nobody for letting me fill in for him for an hour, and I'd like to thank you all for listening. Keep tuned right here. I'm Pat LaMarche for the Homelessness Marathon.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact Nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org. It's all